Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Attention pro athletes. Want to secure your financial legacy and thrive off the field? Oakbridge Wealth Management, led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, is your dedicated financial planning ally. But don't take it from me. Take it from the Dallas Cowboys' Tyler Biadasz. He says, Chris set goals financially and has been incredibly impactful in my journey in the NFL. Experience our customized, comprehensive approach, trusted by top NFL players. Don't leave your financial success to chance. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. And let Oakbridge Wealth Management guide you across the goal line.
Bernstein again. Big opening. Has 5. Has 10. Erlo's a man. And he goes all the way to the 15-yard line. 17-yard.
Welcome back to Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by BetOnline.ag and Oakbridge Wealth Management. Once again, I'm Matt Perkins, joined, as always, by Badger legend, the Hebrew Hammer himself, Matt Bernstein. Bernie, how are we doing today?
Dude, every day on the podcast is a holiday, baby. We got a good one today. Really excited to reconnect with my guy, Touchdown Tyler Donovan.
It's good to be here, guys.
Well, listen, we really appreciate it. This has been a long time coming. I know we tried to organize this one for a little while now as Bernie gets the work going on in his house. So yeah, like I said, everyone knows quarterback Tyler Donovan, one of my favorite players to watch, absolutely, when I was in school, because, you know, getting to see Wisconsin have like a true dual threat quarterback was really fun. You know, he was sort of the prototype. We're going to get into that here in just a minute. Before we do, want to remind everyone that we are presented by BetOnline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, BetOnline, where the game starts. We're going to start, Bernie.
I have to ask the question before we start. Tyler, did Kevin Costner ever call you and draft you?
He did not. But I got a call from how I found out about that situation was I got a call from a few reporters out of Madison. So that's where I got the.
Wait, so they didn't tell you that you were going to be in a movie or your clips were going to be in a movie?
They did not. I think they contacted UW and they talked to them. This is before all the changes. The NCAA and stuff, but I think they went through them to get the rights to the film and stuff. But hey, I was happy to be or happy to see UW get some.
Dude, there is. I know we got to jump. We jumped right in the deep end, but there is nothing cooler than watching a movie. It's called Draft Day with Kevin Costner and Pretty Woman's in it. That's not the right thing to say, but Julia, honey, what's her name?
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt Perkins. You are my honey.
I know.
It was a great movie. And then to see clips of Tyler running and, like, you know, spinning and throwing. And I think Travis caught a touchdown. Like, it's just so cool. And I'm like, wait a second. I know Tyler didn't get paid for this.
No.
But now you would have made $1 million on that movie.
Yeah. This day and age, who knows? But yeah, it was, wow. It was cool. The whole storyline was kind of depicted depicted things in some negative ways, but ultimately it's good exposure for UW, and that was cool to be in.
Dude, did your parents call you and be like, "This is you're in like a big screen movie"?
they definitely went to see it. I think they were the first to go watch that film, but they were probably more excited than I was.
I find it to be I love how they called UW. Like, can we just take these clips of like a specific person without even asking him if it was okay is so crazy right now.
I'd be interested to hear the story behind why they went that route, why where the premise of all that started would be very interesting to
hear. Well,
now
we just need to get Kevin Costner on the podcast.
We do. We should get Kevin. That would answer some questions, I think.
That would be a fun one. But we're here not to talk about Kevin Costner, though, as much fun as it is. We're here to talk about you, Tyler. And so before you became one of the most, ballyhooed quarterbacks in the history of the state of Wisconsin, let's go back many, many years before that. One of the first things we ask people, how did you get into football? Like, how does football become part of your life growing up?
I grew up in a family that was always heavily involved in sports. Remember growing up with my mom's brothers, she had four brothers, and they were kind of like my role models growing up, heavily involved in three sport athletes. So, and then two of them played minor league baseball. So I grew up in that. I remember growing up in the dugouts, being a little young buck, 5-6 years old, and seeing guys just, hearing stuff that I probably shouldn't have always heard, but I probably got embedded into me through those early years, my uncles being heavily involved in sports. And then they weren't really big football guys, but football was always my passion early on. Starting the youth ranks, playing youth football in Brookfield. That's where I grew up. It was Brookfield East, which is Brookfield Central was the other school with Joe Thomas and Strick and Steve Johnson. So that's where I really started getting heavily involved in football, youth ranks, and had my dad as a youth football coach, and all he did was throw early on. This is seventh grade. So he really really propelled my career early on, being exposed to throwing the ball in the youth ranks, probably more than
ever. And you started day one as quarterback?
I came in as my fifth grade, I came in as running back, and then I was throwing in practice, and the head coach was like, we need you to play the quarterback position. And then it was the rest was history from there. But yep.
Wait, so what other sports were you playing, and how did you decide that like football was going to be like the path for you to college?
Early on, I just the playing in the youth games. I think early on, I kind of knew where my passion was at, and I started doing a lot of camps early on throughout Wisconsin. Did the Jeff Turkey camps. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him, but then eventually I actually did a couple UWM camps where that's kind of like that's a really good story right there with how I really started to get involved in football, doing the Wisconsin football camps and working with Daryl Bevel. And this is with the early years of Coach Hort, our running backs coach, Coach White. I remember being a little sixth, seventh grader and seeing these guys and going to their camps and really starting to get a love and a passion for the game at those camps, and really seeing that I actually could be really good at the sport as well. So I
never thought of this until you just mentioned it, but as an in-state kid, like, you literally could go get coached by the coach who might be your coach.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it was crazy because I wouldn't have known, but yeah, it's kind of a cool story to see where I started and where I ended up. And that was a big reason why I ended up choosing Wisconsin in the end, was just those relationships and the loyalty of the UW program.
So you're moving up in high school. You're obviously dominating Wisconsin. What's it like then? Like, when do you know, like, Wisconsin actually becomes somewhere where, like, is Coach Horton calling you? Does he keep up with you as a sixth grader until you're a senior, or like, does he come back in when you're a sophomore?
Yeah, it was. So I really got my exposure my freshman year, sophomore year of high school football. That was my last camp at UW. Again, we at Arrowhead, we ran the wing T, so it wasn't, my film wasn't gonna really make or break. It wasn't going to showcase me who I really was as a football player. So where I really got my in was going to these camps and playing. That's where I really got my exposure with these guys. My sophomore year, I remember finishing that camp and Coach Hort and Coach White and LB pulled me aside and he said, would you ever want to be a Wisconsin Badger? And I was like, of course, like, yeah, that's my dream. And, didn't think much of it, but then the summer after that, I ended up getting a full ride scholarship. And that was before my junior year, so which was crazy because I didn't even have much on film yet. So it was it really told me something that these guys saw something in me, and dream was coming true.
Was there ever anyone else in the picture? Like, oh. Fair, like in 2003, like people committing before their junior year wasn't super common. So how many other schools were sort of like in the mix for you?
So yeah, that was definitely like I couldn't believe that I was getting offered that early with not much on film, running a wing T offense, not throwing the ball. You know, we probably threw, 20 times max. That would be max in the wing T. That was more than Arrowhead had ever done at the time anyways, What was the question again?
So, I mean, were there any of the schools in the mix?
Yeah. So yeah, getting back to that, after my junior year, I got invited to the Nike Combine, which is where I went up and again, got a lot more exposure on the national level, I remember that camp. It was a lot of big name guys. Chris Leak, Vince Young was there. That was his senior year, and Reggie Ball, which is actually Roderick Rogers. That was Rod's QB down in Georgia.
And you and Rod came in together too, which is
we did. Yeah. We did. And I ended up finishing top three with them. It was like top five, and I fell in those ranks. And that's where I really started getting my exposure to other schools. Mostly all Big Ten, but I've got some stuff from Texas and some other big name schools, but in the long run, I always knew I was going to Wisconsin. That's where my heart was.
Can I ask a weird question, Tyler?
Yeah.
Did you go to the Nike camp? Do they invite you? Like, what's the reasoning? You already had a scholarship. That's where you wanted to go. But like, you go to Nike to get better, to just compete with other people, to like, cause it's Nike and you get free stuff. Like, what is the thought behind that?
Yeah. For me, I don't know. Did you do one, Bernie? Did you do that Nike camp?
Dude, I was a fullback in a wing tee. Like, I was invited to no camps. I was from New York. Dude, Westchester County, New York, although I think football is good there, nobody else does. So I was invited to, like, not one camp. I went to Syracuse football camp because it was in New York State, and that's the one that, it's like that's your Hail Mary if you're going to go somewhere.
The difference is your film was – I mean, I've never seen film of anybody like yours, well, so –
it's a battering ram, and Coach White's like, this guy's just a physical monster. I'll take him to play. He's dumb enough to run through all these walls. I mean, I might as well take him.
Right. But yeah.
So was it to get more exposure at Nike, or was it just like, let me compete with these guys, or let me just go do something fun?
It was more of a, I wanted to see where I was at from a competition level. I wanted to see if I could hold up with these guys. So it wasn't, and I also knew at that time my heart was with Wisconsin, but I also wanted to play the field a little bit and see what other options were out there at the time. But again, I was just going out there to compete essentially.
Did any schools come in and you're like, oh wow, let me think a little bit even about this?
I would say Iowa. Iowa was probably my second that I was really heavily looking into, and I also got one from Texas, which is I wasn't expecting that, and that was a number three, and but other than that, I always knew about them. Like I said, it was Wisconsin that I was going to go to.
Did you take any official visits anywhere else?
I didn't.
No. So no. Good for you. I didn't either. Walk us through host to walk us through like your official visit.
Host was Jim Sorgi, and Jim was I mean, I got more respect for that guy than anybody. He brought me under his wing early on, that recruiting trip, which was obviously, you know how those goes, that it was, I mean, I didn't need to be sold, but I was even more sold after that trip. Don't remember much, but he took me under his wing. And then even after the official visit, when I came into Wisconsin, like the whole year, Sorgi was right there with me. I wouldn't probably have been who I was without that early year with him, just learning from him. Not so much on the field, but just off the field more on how to handle yourself. So yeah, Sorgi was a great guy, man.
I was probably there. I would love to have Sorgi as my host. I mean, I had a great bunch of host people, but Sorgi would have been one of the top.
He showed me a good time. You remember his apartment was above, right next to like that Rocky Rococo's above. There's like a little.
It was above like. Yes, it was a Korean restaurant. He lived with Kleber
right above
up there.
Yep.
Right across from McDonald's. Oh yeah.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, Bernie, you're landlord.
I love that guy. Yeah. They're food or bars. Are there any other landmark and Camp Randall? Like, I don't have any other.
They took that Rocky Rococo's is gone now. There's so much has changed in Madison now. It's like I go back and I don't even. It's just like completely.
Tyler, chill. you would have left college with a bank account in the seven figures, probably. Matt Perkins, tell me if I'm wrong.
Oh yeah, starting quarterback for NIL deals at this point. Yeah, it would have been a very different time.
It is crazy
these days. You also like. I also imagine, let's talk about it right now because we're talking about recruiting. Because recruiting nowadays, like, if you are like you were a four star kid and all these recruiting services, right? You know, as a nerd who follows recruiting like very heavily, like, you know, even back then I knew like Connor Donovan is like the man, one of the top five quarterbacks in the country, right? Going to be coming to Wisconsin. I'm excited. But nowadays, like, you would be flown out on like private jets to places and. People would be like offering you like millions and millions of dollars basically on the spot to sign. Have you been following this and like sort of what are your thoughts on that? And do you think that how would that have changed you when you were going through the process?
Here and there. I mean, I think I kind of have mixed feelings with that personally. I think it's changing college football and there's definitely some positive in some of this, but you know, I do think. There are some negative sides to it as well, but it's definitely changing the way the approach of the college game and the recruiting and all that goes into that. I just hope it isn't all about the money in the long term, and you know, college keeps the integrity and the sportsmanship and everything that's made college football so great. Through the years, you look at Saban. You know, Saban was like, "I'm done. I'm not dealing with this." Because I mean, Alabama's probably on a whole nother level, but essentially, it can be the same at all. You know, all colleges. It's definitely changing things, so to say the least.
Wait, Tyler, to backtrack though. You the culture was, think about it. You came in, Sorgi was there, Shabert was right under the year next. Then you had Stocko.
Yep.
And then you were coming in. I don't know if anyone else was in that room.
Yeah, it was Sorge, Shabes, Stocko, and then I came in. And then B Savage came in after me.
But you got to think like that's a like the culture of coming into a room with dudes that every year now almost kind of set up,
yeah,
but still doing it because you wanted to do it, dude. You still waited, you know. Sorge graduated, Shaver eventually graduated, Stocko was started for 2 years, and then it was your turn if that's the right use,
yeah.
And then you showcased how great, and then you played phenomenal. You know, like that culture to me is what we're losing. Is like somebody sticking around at the place they should be at. You know, Tyler, somebody, Texas could have said, I'll give you $1 million. You could be Johnny Manziel right now. Or you could be Tyler Donovan with head on his shoulders, owning a house, having a family. So go through that mindset of like, I'm going to go compete and I might wait a couple of years. Like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think early I knew the, Sacco got after that was the, Sorgi left. And then there was a little bit of a battle between Shaves and Sacco and myself thrown in there. I was still a young buck. So, my biggest thing early on was I was transitioning out of a wing tee offense in high school. So it, from the get-go, my transition probably took a little bit longer for me to get ready for the actual college game. You know, wing tees, you got one receiver, it's one set. It's rarely you're an X and Y, you have a two wide receiver set. So it took me some time to get adjusted to the college game, the passing and the terminology and all that. But essentially, I got into some competitive battles early on. Then Stocko took the reins and he earned it. And I was fortunate to sit back and learn a lot from Stocko, the way he played, the way he managed games. He's a winner, competitor, like Bernie. He was did a lot to win games for the Badgers and. I was basically just when my number was finally called, I was ready to go. I was ready to step up for the team and showcase what I could do.
But in nowadays, you might not have done that. So stuck with it.
That's a great point. You don't see what that my story just wouldn't happen in the college game today. People are going to will transfer in a heartbeat. And when we were playing, if you transferred, you're losing a year, you're sitting out for a year. So that kept a lot of times that wasn't even a thought for players. Now it's just, it's easy. It's almost too easy.
So when you first get to UW and I assume you're playing scout team, during your freshman year, and how was what was it like? So I'm going to think 2003. So you would have been going against Bernie, who was on that defense in 2003. You still had that incredible defensive line.
Everyone, the studs of the studs.
Jefferson and Hawthorne. So you're going up, all Americans, especially on defense every day in practice.
Alex Lewis.
That was a whole nother element to what really got me ready. I was scout team. I wouldn't take that back for anything because you're going up against the best of the best. Monday through Friday, and I just remember them getting because I went hard in scout team, and I probably pissed off a lot of guys doing it, but essentially that's where I knew I needed to kind of keep growing as a college player, especially being a little bit filtered in the wing tee offense in high school. So I took full advantage of that. I knew that that was an opportunity for me to get better as a player and eventually, get ready to be and, compete for that starting role.
What was the hardest part about being on that scout team? Was it having to learn all these different plays for a different team and then your own playbook or going against these guys, like the mental, the physical, like the emotional, like what was the toughest part about being a scout team quarterback?
Playbook was easy. Pull out cards for you to run a play, but I would say that defensive line, man, we had a stacked defensive line, and they would go at you even in scout team. So I remember it got pretty physical at times, which was that was probably good for me and as well as all the other scout team players. But I remember towards the end of that year and having a few of them come up to me and be like, we might've given you a hard time at times, but essentially, you made us better this year. And, that meant a lot to me to hear from some of those guys.
Dude, you're talking about 2003 is one of the best. So 2004 is one of the best defenses we've ever had, but 2003, those guys were all there. You're throwing against some of the best defensive backs. We had almost all the same linebackers, and then the D-line was unreal.
Right, yeah.
With Alex Lewis, I think, was there in 03.
Yep.
And you had Anton, you had Jason Jefferson.
Erasmus?
Erasmus, J-Dub, yep. Jonathan Welsh.
Some studs.
Dude, and not only that, you came in with a bunch of guys who are on the line there. So what was it like becoming like a team or a camaraderie with some of the guys on the scout team?
It was good. It was, I think that's where it all starts, you know, with your recruiting class. I mean, you probably have one or two, three guys that ended up not redshirting and they're playing a little bit, but the nucleus of your guys are banging it out on the practice field with you and going head to head. And that's where you really, start to learn about who you are as a, you know, as a class, as well as, you know, who's going to go to battle with you. You know, those early years can be tough. Like, you know, Bernie, I mean, it's your freshman years, you know, we can even talk about the seminary, but even in season, they'll see the guys. I think you can tell early on who's going to succeed and who's not. But ultimately you're building that camaraderie early and you're just getting ready to set yourself up to help the team however you can.
What's your worst memory of the seminary?
Seminary. I mean, my early years was, I had 2 years at the seminary, and then it's when they shut it down. Bernie, was the last seminary year at your senior year?
I did 1 year, like at the stadium when we did that.
Yeah.
So I did four seminaries.
Four.
I did four, three or four.
I did that four was like
five
seminaries.
Five seasons.
It sounds like four tours. Like I did four tours at the seminary.
Not one of them was better than any other one. They were all horrible. The first one's definitely the worst. You know nothing, and you walk in. That's why I can't wait to hear. Like, you walk in, and no one. You have no friends. You have all your. I came to college with all my stuff because I had nowhere else to go. There's no computer. There's no cell phone. There's no Wi-Fi. The only thing you had was like a TV that had four channels, and they didn't really work that well. And there was no good channels, and like three video games. Like, there's no newspaper. Like, you do nothing about the outside world.
Yeah, there's not much that's going on outside of football. But, I remember my first year at the seminary, and it was just, as a freshman, it's, as you get older, it's probably gets a lot easier at the seminary. But that's when we had the old school coaches. I mean, Coach White, Huber. I mean, these guys are old school. So they, you know, there's, as coming in as a freshman, not only dealing with the mental and physical aspects, but just the grind of getting, you know, from the coaches that are just tough, and then there's still hazing going on. So there's a lot to deal with as a young buck. But essentially I wouldn't take anything back because it makes you, you know, essentially makes you who you are, or ingrains a lot of things that help you down your career.
You can persevere pretty much through almost anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wait, Tyler, who was your roommate?
I had my roommate was Stocko and then who did I have? My freshman year, I didn't have anybody. I was by myself. And then sophomore year was Richard. Sophomore was with Stocko.
How on earth did you get your own room?
I don't know, man. I don't know. But
dude, it's so Tyler, think about just the little things were the hardest things for me. Walking one more flight of stairs to the top when you weren't a starter was so annoying to me because you had to walk 20 more stairs. They didn't have doors on the bathrooms in your specific room. So dude, it's so funny. I was Bob Dockery and I were we came in together. We were roommates there, and we were messaging today. Not about this, but like every day he'd wake up and I'd be sitting there in the bathroom and there's nowhere to go. Like we made eye contact. Like I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. There's no door. Like, why is there no door on this room? It's like, it's those little things of like, you had to wake up and go get your ankles taped first so you can be fast to eat, to go out. Like, it's just, I just didn't. And then I didn't know any of the plays and I couldn't learn fast enough. And I was getting killed my freshman year. Like, it was just like survival every minute of every day.
Yeah. That's how it was tough, man. Seminary was probably one of the hardest things to get through my whole college career.
And nobody likes you because you're brand new.
No love.
The coaches don't care about you. Like, you're a Coach White. You loved me when you were recruiting me, but now this is a weird dynamic. you have like three dudes, like AD used to come up to me in the, you know, be like, hey, dude, just stick with it. Like Russ, Coons, and like even Chad sometimes would be like, dude, you know, this sucks, but you got it.
Yep. And that's how you get through it right there, what you just said.
That's it.
It's like, you guys, your teammates that just got to fight through it. It's better. But
dude, lifting in your cleats, like there's nothing good about that place.
Yeah. This, everything was actually late night meetings were the easiest part.
Because you're nothing to worry about. It.
Yeah. Just the grass, that little stuff that is, and the just the constantly doing the same thing over and over again. It's a grind, but
it's called insanity.
It's insanity. It was insanity.
But you know what's crazy, Tyler? What was that first? So the first year we didn't go there. To me, I was sad. I was a little sad. It was a whole different just world.
I was too. Also, I mean, like I said, as you get older, that those scenarios get a little bit easier with experience and whatnot. But yeah, it almost felt like we were missing something. It was almost too easy, to be honest.
It was almost too easy.
Yeah. But.
Attention athletes. Do you want a frictionless and tailored financial planning experience to secure your future? Well, look no further. Introducing Oak Bridge Wealth Management, the premier financial planning firm for professional athletes. Led by wealth manager Chris Anicetti, our team provides a unique and comprehensive approach, ensuring your financial success both on and off the field. We understand the unique challenges you face as a professional athlete, from managing cash flow habits to planning major business purchases and navigating complex contracts. That's why we've developed a proven process, working closely with our strategic partners to provide seamless solutions for your unique financial journey. Our services evolve with your career, offering short, mid, and long-term goal setting, portfolio optimization, real estate investments, and more. As you transition to life beyond the field, we support you with career development and philanthropic ventures. But don't just take our word for it. Top NFL players like Chase Roulier, Tyler Biadasz, Alec Ingold, and more trust Oak Bridge Wealth Management to guide them towards financial success. Troy Dye of the Minnesota Vikings says, I really love the work that Chris and the rest of the Oak Bridge group do. I especially like the honesty and transparency when it comes to setting up financial goals and plans that best fit my needs and situation. It's time to elevate your financial game plan. Connect with Chris on Instagram at OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. That's OakbridgeWM_Anicetti. And join the winning team.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So one of the guys that you came in with was someone, obviously, that you faced a ton in high school, Joe Thomas, who recently, you know, NFL Hall of Famer, and, you know, why they consider one of the greatest players of all time. And obviously, because you guys growing up compete against each other in football, then you go to college together. What was your relationship like with Joe, you know, from high school on? And then what's it been like to sort of watch him go on and take these next steps? I mean, everyone always says, oh, yeah, we always expected it. But, like, did you really expect it? What has become of him?
I mean, to a degree, yes. I mean, Joe's stint was always a standout guy and just, I mean, deserves everything and more than what he's accomplished. But yeah, we I even played AAU basketball with Joe, like early, like back in the Brookfield days before I moved out to Arrowhead. And you could, he was always dominating everything he did on just another level. But Joe's like a special human being. What he's been able to accomplish is nothing short from extraordinary. And it's been fun to see his path even after he's retired now, and seeing how, you know, everything that he's doing. Like, I love to watch him on when he was doing the Thursday night football. You know, he's such a well-spoken guy, and has so much insight to the game. So it's been, but yeah, but competing, we didn't ever get the chance to compete against each other in high school, but, it was when we heard that he was coming to UW in our class, it was that definitely, changed some things for us as a group.
It must have felt nice knowing that you're coming in with like one of the great left tackles.
Yeah, I've known early on how good he was going to be, but I mean, you knew he was going to be good, but where he took his career and is, I mean, yeah, maybe he's a Hall of Famer. Just not much needs to be said about that.
Dude, he came in, he was not a big guy. Like he was, I mean, he was tall, but he wasn't like huge, like a lineman, just strong. I call him Jason. I call him Jason from the movies. Like it was unkillable. Like he could just walk. All he had to do was walk and he would chase down people who were sprinting away. Like it was just, he just was unstoppable. That's just what I remember from when he came.
My first official start was at Iowa. This is in 06. Stock went down a game before that we played Penn State and Stock went down with a shoulder injury. And that was like my first time to experience the wrath and I should say of her having a left tackle as good as Joe Thomas was. Like literally remember being in that game and expecting pressure and just not having it. The guy was just, you just didn't have to worry about your backside at all with Joe. It was just made things a lot easier for us quarterbacks, that's for sure.
What were you talking about, that first start? Yeah, man, because like obviously, you know, Stock had been the starter for, you know, it was his second season as a starter and he'd done pretty well, but like you said, he went down with injury and, you know,
that's his third season as a starter.
One of the
senior.
Oh, third year, sorry. Yeah, that's right. Shoot. Yeah, 2006. I'm thinking 2005. And you know, I'm always tough. Like, what is that? You know, what's that like for you? What's going through your head? And, you know, what helped you sort of get ready for that moment?
First, it was pretty surreal knowing that our first official start was going to be against Iowa, a team that I kind of had some love for in the recruiting process. And then that point in that year, it was a very pivotal point in the season. It was the last conference game. We had one loss, so there was a lot riding on that game. So I was ready to go, man. All the years, all the hard work that I put in the years before that, this getting that opportunity, and those opportunities are hard to come by. And when I got my number called, man, I was gonna do anything to not let my teammates down and find a way to win that game.
You're selling yourself short, dude. You balled out in that game. That game was freaking awesome. I remember being like, yo, this guy's the truth. I'm so excited for everything that is coming. Because I mean that to get a win at Iowa in your first game, two touchdowns, picks, like you played a great game. Like that must have been, especially because you've talked about like you had been sitting and waiting your turn and biding your time. Like, what are your emotions going through both during and after that game?
Hold on. We also haven't won a game there. We haven't won a game against Iowa in like 5 or 6 years.
That's the thing. Yeah. I was not at that time. It was a very tough place to win. I mean, yeah, Bernie, you know that. It was a hostile environment. Iowa versus Wisconsin. It was always a battle, no matter what. And then given the, you know, being at Iowa, you know, the fans are literally, you can touch the fans behind you, so they're right, you know, you can hear everything they're saying. But I think early on through that week, I just kind of stayed calm, cool, and collected, knowing that, you know, just put my work in. And obviously you take as you get your reps as a starter, you know, you become a lot more confident. That whole week really helped me. And Coach Christ is an amazing offensive coordinator that just, you know, found ways to adapt and build a scheme and or a plan around his players. He did that for everybody, you know, Stock. And then, you know, we changed some things up in that game that kind of encompassed my game a little bit more to make me confident. And then when it was go time, man, it was ready to show showcase, you know, really showcase my teammates what I was all about. And that was, you know, winning football games, trying, you know, being a playmaker and competing. Man, it's all about competing.
Dude, Tyler, did you have any like pregame? Like, what did you do pregame? Like, what was your like lead up to kickoff?
Lead up to, man, it's been a while, but pregame, man, I was just, honestly, I didn't do like in terms of like getting yourself like prepped up, like music wise or anything, or man, I just.
No, like, would you like you woke up? What time did you wake up? Did you like run to get food? Did you just chill? Did you skip breakfast?
If I remember right, I think I made it just like any other regular day. I didn't want to over, you know, just like, you know, it is a game day. So I didn't want to make too much of it. So I wasn't, you know, I just wanted to be in my right, find a place where I could get in my right mindset to go in and put the team in the best position to win a football game. And it was, I just remember being just really zoning in and thinking about seizing the opportunity and knowing what was on the line and finding a way that I needed to come up big for my teammates.
Dude, how do you get juiced up for the 11 a.m. game, though?
Yeah, it was. Was that, I'm not sure if that was an 11 a.m. game. It might have been 11.
No, not that. I'm just saying in general, like yeah. the 11. Oh, like,
those are the worst. Those are tough. They're the worst. Yeah. We got a knock on our door. What time in the hotel? Probably like.
It's like 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, 6:30 was. And angry, I'm ass, and then heading to the stadium around 8 o'clock, 8:30. It was probably before that, but yeah, those were tough. Those early games were, and I think everybody can attest. Even fans probably don't really enjoy those 11 o'clock games. But
yeah, they're definitely tough. They're definitely not the favorite. But I will say that Iowa game, I drove down for the my best friend from Iowa City, so I was at that game. Yeah, so we drove down. And he was also, I think he was my roommate at that time too. Maybe not. I don't know. Either way, we were at that game. It was like, you know, like I have like a couple like very vivid like college football memories in my life. One is burning under the lights against Penn State, and one of those is the Iowa game. So for me, like that's really cool, bringing back a lot of memories. But going into your senior year, you had started two games as a junior. You know, you'd gotten those two wins. You looked really good in both those games against Iowa and Buffalo. You know, Stock comes back and plays the bowl game as his last game as a Badger. But then going into 2007, right, like Wisconsin, 2006, awesome year, you know, finished with a really strong record, a really great bowl win over Darren McFadden in Arkansas. And so everyone kind of knows that, like, you're the guy. It's your turn. Like I said, you've waited your turn. You've proven that you're able to do on the field. What was it like to, you know, even going to spring practice, knowing that, like, you now have to be, you know, starting quarterback's always going to be a leader on the team. What was it like to know that you had to step up and not just, you know, be the best player you can on the field, but have to start to lead a group of 105, 18 to 23-year-olds?
Yeah. I mean, well, first off, I was lucky to play behind a lot of good players, like not just at the quarterback position, but at all positions, people like Bernie, people, you know, there's a lot of people that you learn through the way. So it kind of made things easier when that time comes. But we all know once you get to that point that it's when it's your time, you got to step up to the plate and be that guy. I did still have to compete even my senior year for it. That's how it should have been. I think that's, that ultimately made me better going into that season. No, that Allen Everidge actually came in and he was gonna transfer in and he was competing with me that year. And I wouldn't take anything back from that either, because that pushed me through camp to keep getting better and knowing that nothing is given to you. You still gotta, you know, doesn't matter what you did the year before, you still gotta earn things. And I only had two or three games of true raw starting games. So I still had a lot to prove. But I went in and came with that mindset that I was going to take this position and I was going to compete and come Saturdays, I was going to do exactly what I did in that Iowa game. That's do anything you can, find ways to win football game.
See, it's funny, like Tyler's such a cool, calm, like quiet person, even outside, like in the locker room. And like when we would go out to the bars and like anywhere you'd be, like, even if he had a couple adult sodas, he wasn't getting loud. Like, he wasn't obnoxious like me. So always like this cool, but in the huddle, like people respected you. People respected Tyler because we understood what that road was, what that journey is. It's nothing is given. And even older dudes who played a lot of football like me and some other guys, like, we're just in there, like, when Tyra's talking, like, we're shutting the hell up. Yeah. So, like, I always love that about you. Like, your persona on the field and off the field, I wouldn't say way different, but just much different in, like, in the huddle presence versus, like, we're just sitting at a bar presence.
Yeah, that's how – I mean, when the lights came on, I was always known – I was probably more of a gamer than I was when the lights turned on. There was a switch kind of turned on with me. And I think a lot of my younger years, I don't think a lot of guys actually got to see that. Bernie, you probably didn't get to see as much to me as you probably could have once I eventually started getting some more time. But when the lights turned on, man, it was another, you got to turn the switch on and you got to, it was a whole nother, probably another Tyler that came into play for sure. And so, I needed that because I am very, you're right. I'm very, like, very quiet usually. And, but to succeed, there's another element needs to come out in you when you get in that huddle, and you demand respect and you got to go out and perform.
What's the biggest difference between on the field Tyler and the Tyler we're talking to right now?
I would say you probably would see, man, definitely a more competitive edge, more of a competitive, less low key type of individual for sure.
What do you think? What was the biggest change from, like, your practice self to, like, your game day self?
Practice self to, I think I just, that's when I was always at my best when things are, you know, I was early on, like we talked about a little bit, like practice squad, you know, I was, you know, on that element of my career, I treated that like it was a game. And then through the middle stages of my career, my redshirt sophomore year, I almost kind of got complacent a little bit because it got easy. I mean, Stocko had the role. He was doing his thing. And so I got a little complacent. But then when it came my time, it was, I was going to give everything I could.
I just think, like, your athleticism shined like times 10. Like, you really, everything was just like cool and collective in practice, learning, figuring things out. And then at the game, not just unleashing it like we all did, but like, just, I don't know. It's like my video player in my head that plays like old film is just like, man, Tyra was like doing spin moves and juking people and like throwing the ball and making crazy plays. And granted, it's practice, so you don't always do that, but like, it just seemed like your game elevated by so much more than, you know, maybe a lineman or a fullback or somebody.
Yeah, that's where, I mean, like early in my career, that's first of all, that's the type of player, football player I always was. So like when I was always a dual threat, wanted to get on the edge. It was if I had a yard to get and it meant taking out a big hit, I was going to do it. That's just the type of player I was going into it. And I tried to find ways to elevate my game through my that athletic side of things, because that's where I was at my best, I think.
So we've only got a couple minutes here left, but I want to sort of move talk about sort of your bigger experience at UW in general, because, you know, UW, as everyone who comes on the show says, is a unique and a special place. When you think about your sort of your life in Madison and your career in Madison off of the field, what are some of like the things that like stand out or that you always come back to?
Some of the things that like experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, going back, just first off the teammates, you never forget your teammates. I would say that's at the root of everything. And yeah, I mean, you got relationships that I still have today from my guys. I'll never, that's one thing I'll never, you know, never forget. Outside of the whole Madison, how great the campus is, how beautiful things are. Saturdays, you know, I remember most my, you know, those teammates, those guys that you went to spill blood for sure.
And so what are those teammates?
I remember all those, like, even this is what now, 10 years ago, maybe, no, this is maybe 10 years ago, we would go to every St. Paddy's Day with you guys and go and hang down. It'd be Poziak would come in, Kleber, like a lot of dudes would show up at your house or your apartment in Chicago. It was a lot of fun, dude. So I agree. Just to piggyback on what you're saying, is like that camaraderie, it's impossible to take away.
Yes. It is.
Yeah, and I think that's something that everyone sort of like talks about. It's like that's the thing that people miss more than the competition on the field is the camaraderie from the locker room off the field is impossible to replicate.
I mean, that's what you're playing for more than coaches and, you know, meet the university. You're playing for your guys more than anything, I think.
So I love that because it's 100% the truth.
Yeah.
You know, like even like the struggling on the state, like on doing the stadiums, like all the stuff that sucked, you just like, even like when we were at the seminary, even at camp, you just remember funny things that you and your dudes were doing together. I don't yes, you remember all the things that sucked, but like the funnier parts are the things that you were doing with your guys.
Yep.
You know, either leg circuits or just, I don't know, just even though all that stuff really sucked.
Absolutely.
You were doing with the same dudes and it was just kind of, you joked a lot about it.
Everyone was going through it. Everyone was hurting. Yeah.
Nobody cared if you were getting MF'd. Nobody cared if somebody else was getting MF'd. Like nobody cared about any of that. It's just, dude, it's very special is what it is.
Yep.
Well, Bernie mentioned St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. And as St. Patty's Day comes up though, I need to ask, so what are you doing now? You're still in Chicago land. You're still in the Chicago area. Where is your post-football career taking you, and how'd you get into what you're doing these days?
So I came down after my stunt in the CFL. I played in Edmonton, Edmonton Eskimos and Calgary for the first year. And then, immediately after that, I moved down to Chicago. I got recruited into a job in the private equity field. So I did a management fellowship with Cancer Treatment Centers of America, where essentially it's they push you to a management role rather quickly. So I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to do that. And then I fell into their sister company, which is International Capital Investment Company, that they're essentially fell under their umbrella on the real estate investment side of things. So that's what I did from 2012 to up to 2020. And then now I'm in a consultant role with the same company doing mixed use, some residential development side of stuff. So I do the project management as well as oversee the whole portfolio management of things. So keeps me busy.
Sounds like it. No sounds say. Like it. So what do you think? We have 5 minutes left. I can give you one more. What do you think of the Badgers today? Like, what are you excited about the team for today? Not for today, but as in this time period.
I think the future is bright for them. I think, you know, I like what I'm seeing out of Fickell. I think he's got a, you know, it's early on. It's this last year. I don't think it was like a year that anybody's celebrating, but I think he's bringing in his guys. He's going to get his identity. A lot has changed since our years. We were ground and pound, man. Our identity as an offense was pretty different from what it is today. I think he's still trying to integrate some of those things that we did in the past. But I like the draft. I think it's going to be interesting to see once he gets his guys in how things progress with the team. And I think, you know, there's a great tradition at Wisconsin. It's going to be hard to not succeed. You just have to stick with it. And I think get the right guys in, get the right recruits in and keep building off of, you know, what he started. And, you know, they got a lot of good guys in there. It looks like they brought out some new coaches that I like. And they just got to stick with it, man. There's a lot of good that's happening with under Coach Fickell, and I think good things are going to happen.
Well, we're actually going to have Coach Blazek, the new offensive line coach, here on our next episode, which is which will be fun. But got to ask you real quick. You grew up playing a wing T and then played in a power offense in college. How do you think you would have done in a wide open spread offense where you were asked to do a little bit of read option and a lot, everything out of the shotgun? How do you feel like you would have done in that system?
That definitely would have elevated my game for sure. But that's Coach Chris, going into my senior year when he kind of adapted the offense around me a little bit more, we did a lot more sprint out and a lot more play action stuff than a lot probably remember. But yeah, I probably would have thrived a little bit more.
You would have been a beast.
We didn't even do shotgun my senior year, which I don't know why we didn't, but it would have helped me a lot. I'm a 6'1" guy, so it's tough to always see over those 6'8", 6'7" offensive linemen, but it would have helped for sure.
Well, I mean, personally, when I played the NCAA video game, I would always switch the Wisconsin offense to an option offense because you were like one of the fastest quarterbacks in the game. So again, undefeated there. Especially with college football, NCAA football coming back for EA Sports, I'm very excited about that. I might even have to buy a PS5.
I'm going to buy a copy for sure. I get it. Those bring back some good memories. That game right there, man. That was the GOAT of all games for sure. You got to put Bernie in at running back too while you're at it.
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
I don't know why, but I fumbled almost like 1 out of 5 times I touched the ball. Believe me, I gave it to the fullback, a.k.a. me, every time it was short yardage, multiple times, and every 1 out of 5 I'd fumble. I don't know. I should sue EA is what I should do.
Yeah, that's not right, because you never fumbled. So.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Well, Tyler, we cannot thank you enough for joining us here today on Believe in Badgers on the Believe Network, presented by BetOnline.ag and Oak Bridge Wealth Management. Like I said, we'll be back next time with Coach A.J. Blazek. And so everyone, thank you for tuning in wherever you are watching or listening. Subscribe, rate, review, you know the process, you know what to do. Again, thanks for tuning in. And until next time.
Tyler, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.